Papa see Jesus.
See, special episode.
Episode.
Number nine.
Versus.
Avatar. Thank you.
This episode has bad words I can't say and gives away the end of the movie.
Hey, this is Tony, and I'm just going to take a minute here to break in before we go ahead and jump into our episode to talk to you about something kind of serious. A good friend of the podcast, T. Morris, on January the 6th, as I'm recording this, that was last Wednesday, 8 days ago, his wife passed away unexpectedly. There was no warning. It was very sudden. And T is now a single parent. They had a five-year-old daughter together, and T is left now to raise five-year-old Sonic Boom all on his own. And the community that surrounds us, podcasting and the authorship community, because T is also an author, and the community has rallied to support T and help him out in this time of need. As of this point, I'm recording this on January the 14th, $17,000 has been raised to help T with immediate expenses, and then any other funds go into a trust fund for Sonic Boom. If you get the chance, please visit theboomeffect.org. There's a charity event that's being run through that site. There's going to be a webathon, an auction, and it's all going to take place the last weekend in February. I'm going to be part of it. We're donating stuff to the cause. So if you get the opportunity, please visit the website, theboomeffect.org. You'll see some information in the show notes. And you'll probably also hear this message a couple of times throughout the next couple of podcasts. You've probably heard it couple of podcasts before this, and you'll probably hear a couple of podcasts after this. I apologize if this gets repetitive or boring, but this is T. He's a good friend of the show and a good personal friend. I really consider him a personal friend. So if you have the means, if you have the opportunity, please check out theboomeffect.org. Heck, maybe there's something that's going to be donated that's being auctioned off through that site that you really want. I've seen the list, and there's some really great stuff coming up. So, with that said, on with the show, and hope you enjoy the episode. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is Chris.
And we have a special guest with us tonight.
Hello, everyone. This is IMDT. And, yeah.
You earned that. You earned that this past week on Twitter.
You know, I was listening to the... I listened to the 100th episode where I did my 100... I turned out, what, it was 128 movies or 124 movies in 100 minutes. And I was like, wow, I am a font of useless knowledge. And what was it? Pip Ballantyne actually hung that nickname on me. She called me IMDT, and I thought that's pretty good. But you know, I tell you, when I get stumped on my movie trivia, I get upset with myself. I really, really do. I get absolutely mad at myself, especially if it's something I should know. But now I was particularly proud of that. But what tweets were you talking about? Were you talking about when someone said, "Can you name the taglines?"
It was the taglines, yeah.
Yeah. Someone asked, what was the tagline from the Fly? And I said it was, "Be afraid, be very afraid." And actually, it was funny. There was on the Huffington Post, they actually have, they had this this column that was the worst taglines for movies ever conceived.
Ooh.
And they had one for High Crank, Crank to High Voltage. Which I kind of liked. I liked it because it's Jason Statham, so you know it's going to be a goofy ride. And so they're like, he died, he got better. You know, like,
nice.
Yeah, you know. But I think the funniest one was the one for, and this will really date me because I remember when this movie came out. a Chuck Norris movie called Silent Rage. It made Huffington Post's cut. And literally they did a synopsis of the film on the poster.
Oh, wow. I remember that movie. I don't remember much about it, but I remember that it was out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a precursor to the, you know, they were basically trying to do the whole unstoppable killer. So who can stop the unstoppable killer? Of course,
Chuck Norris. Yep.
So anyway, some of the posters they had out there were pretty funny. Let's see. But that one, when they did the one for Crank 2, I was kind of surprised because I was like, no, I like that one. But there are some taglines that I've seen them for films and I just go, oh wow, why don't you just paint a target on yourself? But I do like a good tagline. I do like a good tagline.
They can make the marketing for a movie sometimes.
Yeah, they can find
sometimes.
Sometimes. Sometimes. And they can also destroy a movie.
This is true.
But that is neither here nor there. But that is not what we are here to talk about.
No. Tonight it's Avatar.
Tonight it is Avatar, and probably I'm going to be pissing off a lot of your listeners because I feel like my cheese is standing totally and utterly alone, particularly in light of its slew of Oscar nominations.
All right. So we'll break this down because you're new to how we've kind of developed the system how we go through this.
What?
Yeah,
what? We roll.
We have.
My God.
We have
an actual
format.
Procedure. Yes, and it's not all done in post.
No, it's not. So first we give our kind of our high level thoughts. Then we'll kind of go through what we thought of the acting. Then we'll go through a plot synopsis. And as we do the plot synopsis, we'll kind of...
We're talking about
tangentialize.
Avatar, right?
Yeah, we'll tangentialize.
Plot synopsis with Avatar?
Yes, we will.
Oh,
hey.
Shit. Okay.
Hey, we did a plot synopsis for Airplane. Thank you very much.
But the difference between the two movies, there was a plot for Airplane.
There's also a tendency to hijack the process along the way, so
that does happen often.
Okay. Although Adam's not here, so that might happen less.
Yeah, that bums me out. But there's one thing I want to say. There is there's an agenda, and I do have to. I want to make sure that we hit this agenda sometime while I'm on the show tonight. I want to talk about the unseen connection, or what we can learn from these three films that I saw very close to one another, which is Avatar, District 9, and The Hangover.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
They are all connected, and I'm going to explain that connection, or at least the lesson we can learn from all three of these movies. Okay, and so make sure someone makes a note.
Fantastic.
Oh, sir, that one is noted and burned into my brain.
We'll have to create a special section just for that.
Just wait until I make this connection. You think
Morris is totally...
This will make 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon look like a freaking chess match. Okay?
I think I'm cutting a promo out of this.
Okay, so we will also keep the first half spoiler free.
Okay.
When we go to the deep geeking, then we'll feel free to spoil anything you want about anything. But we'll keep it kind of spoiler free.
Okay.
As much as you can, really.
I'd also like to note that this episode will be presented in 3D.
Stereo.
And IMAX.
IMAX, yeah.
3D for your mind.
All right. So... High level thoughts. T, go ahead.
High level thoughts. Well, they said that Cameron pretty much, you know, isolated himself and, you know, and spent 15 years in this film, and it shows. I felt that when you say high level thoughts, you're talking about like a critical analysis of the film
just a brief nutshell. Did you like
without,
it? Did you not like
snark.
It? Yeah.
You want me to avoid the snark?
Oh, we'll get into the snark. It'll come in. That's fine.
we'll let you cut loose later.
But I would say yeah. I mean, if I were to describe this. I will actually step in my Wayback Machine to when I was in New Zealand. I was in New Zealand and I was listening to a guy named Norman Cates. He actually is one of the people that worked on Avatar. He actually was working on Avatar when I met him.
Oh, wow.
He works for the Weta Workshop. Mm. Super guy, Norman. Norman is, I mean, you can actually do a search for him on YouTube. And there's just a little mini documentary about Norman. He's just, like I said, good value. Well, Norman said at the beginning of his talk about Weta, I mean, the room was packed because everybody wanted to hear about Avatar. And he started his talk by saying, first off, I have to give everyone a disappointment. I'm still going to talk about Weta, but I cannot say a thing about Avatar because I am under a non-disclosure agreement. However, I can tell you this about Avatar. It is pretty. It is very, very pretty. And the way he said it and the way he delivered it, I'm like, that's not the laid-back Kiwi approach to life. That's a commentary.
Mm.
And now that I've seen it, I can say, yeah, it was pretty. And that was, and you know what? But if I wanted pretty, I could actually do a real 3D experience, go to an Elizabethan garden and look at the flowers or something like that. That would have been pretty, but the difference is I would have had some sort of emotion evoked. Whereas with Avatar, it was pretty without the emotion.
All right. Chris, you look like you want to say something.
I like the movie. That's me. I think as evidenced by my commentary in the chat room last week during the Mummy episode, I tend to take a little bit more interest in movies that are fun and not be quite as critical of them when I'm reasonably sure that they're there for the for me to eat popcorn during and kind of turn off my brain. I saw this movie on an afternoon in which I had been released from my familial obligations and went to see it alone in a theater in 3D and enjoyed it immensely. I saw it for what it was, though. It was an archetypal story, very, very low on the plot totem pole.
Mm-hmm.
Visually stunning. I will go beyond pretty. Parts of it literally were breathtaking. And I can see we're in the hands of a better writer and a director who's more focused on plot rather than visuals. Because I don't think anyone's ever accused James Cameron of being obsessed with plot.
Watch your tongue, young man. We're going to get to that in a second. I will take you down. I will take you down to Chinatown.
Bring it, Morris. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Daryl, what do you got?
I enjoyed this movie quite a bit. I mean, it's pure eye candy. I mean, this is one of the few 3D movies that I've seen that 3D actually works, and it's not just a freaking gimmick. Yeah, stories you've seen a thousand times. It's Lawrence of Arabia. It's At Play in the Fields of the Lord. It's Dancing with Wolves. You know, it's nothing terribly original there, but it's fun to watch. It's an action adventure film.
My favorite comparison was to Ferngully.
I've actually seen it also compared to Pocahontas.
Yeah, so that
Disney's Pocahontas, there was especially.
There was a whole thing from Crack.com.
Yeah, about that. Yeah. So my thoughts on this movie are, I think this movie is comparable to about three or four other movies, and I'm going to make people's heads explode, certain people especially. And the movies that I'm referring to are The Jazz Singer, Wizard of Oz, and Star Wars. And I'm saying that because this is a leap in the type of filmmaking. The story is not original. The acting is not superb. The visuals are incredibly stunning. There's a whole new technology at play and a whole new way of telling a story. Regardless of the story that's told, there's a new way of doing it. And I think this movie is going to be the benchmark, the touchstone, for the milestone, if you will, of when that happened. And that it's breaking all these financial records. It's people are going to go 3D, and it's already being shown. We talked about it in our we're doing the news from the back seat now. Also, it's a little side thing we're doing. We talked about that last time, and it's 3D is here now. And it's not just the gimmick. It's not just the gimmick.
It's 3D. It's now a legitimate filmmaking process.
Yeah.
It's going to take a bunch of years.
Wait, I do have a problem though with the numbers. I have a problem with the numbers because yes, they're constantly going back to the box office receipts, and I'm like, yeah, but
the box office receipts is not a good indicator.
Spin.
Because here's my problem with it. My problem with it is that, yeah, but most of the places where this is playing, because Cameron said if you want the ultimate experience, you go to IMAX.
You go to IMAX, you go to 3D. Yep.
And you know you're paying twice as much for a ticket to an IMAX theater than you are to a regular theater.
You're right. And so
for every two people that went to go see, you know, to go see Avatar in IMAX and 3D, to match or try to top that, you'd have to have four other people going to get, you know, going to a different movie.
You're right.
And, well, not exactly, because the 3D movies ticket prices are about $3 to $4 higher. Here in St. Louis, they're charging about $12. For the 3D film.
Here's what I'll say.
Versus 9.
When I saw it at the beginning of January, I saw it at the end of the first week of January. Film had been in the theaters, 3 weeks at that point?
Oh, yeah, give or take.
Okay. I saw it on a Friday afternoon, not a holiday, Friday afternoon. There were easily 60 people in the theater.
Right.
Okay. And that's unheard of for 3 weeks after release in this day and age.
A couple things that I'll say about box office, and it's not about the gross ticket sales.
No.
It's going to be about the box office trend. Most movies, when they are released, the first week they have they blow their wad in their first week.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The typical drop off is about 50%.
And the theaters just hate that.
And it sucks for the theaters because they throw all this money into marketing the movie.
Well, it's not the theaters throw all the money into marketing. The thing is that the movie company gets the lion's share of the ticket sales in the first 2-3 weeks, and if the movie haven't got any legs, then the exhibitor gets. Is basically working for nothing.
Right.
I don't remember where I read this quote, but it was someone in the studio, in one of the studios, that said, "You have 3 days."
Yeah, you pretty much do.
On most films, you have 3 days.
And if you go to boxofficemojo.com and go through their records, it is ridiculous. The number of records, you can scroll down for 3 or 4 pages of all of the records that there are. Mm-hmm. Best opening on a 3-day holiday, best opening on Columbus Day, best opening in January. I mean, it's just ridiculous, the differences. The thing with this movie, though, is the drop-off from week to week is ridiculously small by comparison to the trend, to what it is now. And it's because everybody's saying you have to go see this in the theater.
And
that's going to be maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but this is where I'm also somewhat critical about Avatar in the theater. Yeah, it's going to be stunning. I remember the Blair Witch Project was terrifying in the theater,
mm-hmm.
and I also remember that the Transformers movie was really damn cool in the theater. And when I saw both Blair Witch and Transformers on television, I thought to myself, this is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And I know that with Avatar, I'm not going to have the IMAX, you know, screen. I'm not going to have the 3D experience. I'm certainly going, it's going to look really pretty.
Well, they've already announced that the DVD is set for a June release, and they've announced that it is not being released in 3D. Because they have the capability of doing 3D at this point, But the studio and probably Cameron don't feel that the technology is on par with what he wants to produce as
Cameron another 15 years to develop, and then we'll figure it out.
Well, no, we'll just have another special release. Now experience the movie in its original theater format.
That'll probably be
a special edition 5 or 6 years from now.
Well, that'll probably be when the sequel's released, mm-hmm. because they're already talking sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God!
When you make $2 billion, somebody's gonna milk it that teat some more.
But I'm curious. One, is it gonna take another 15 years? And two, are they gonna have a better script this time?
Well, now here's the thing about the whole 10 to 15 year development cycle for him. a lot of what they spent over the last 10 years on this film is developing technology.
And it showed.
Yeah.
And it showed.
Oh, yeah.
Technically, the movie was absolutely, in my opinion, the technical aspect of the movie and the challenges they gave themselves and what they did technically was all beautiful. I mean, it was. I would agree. It was a stunning piece of work to look at.
It's probably the most immersive film I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I'll say that hands down.
Yes.
The most immersive experience I've ever
visually
had in the theater.
Visually immersive. Visually immersive.
Yes.
There's this parable that I know about. It's a musician's parable about a musician who was hailed in his world as the one of the greatest musicians that ever lived. He said, "Well, I'm going to, I'm going to create the world's greatest piece of music work, and he locks himself away for years on years on years on years just to develop this incredible piece of music. And he merges, and the people in his community all assemble, and they all get there. And he starts the music, and he starts to play the symphony, and the people in the audience are mortified because while technically it is flawless, it lacks heart, it lacks emotion. And quite honestly, when it comes to Cameron's films, and maybe this is why I am so critical of Avatar, people are just tripping over themselves saying what a great film this is, and I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't wipe my ass with this, and I tell you why. Because I did not care one iota when people started dropping near the end. I mean, it was I really did not care. And to say that about a Cameron film, and one thing I love about Cameron's movies, one, the plots, even if they're derivative, he makes them work. Two, the characters are airtight. I mean, even Titanic, I liked Rose. I liked
Titanic is a great movie.
Titanic is a great movie.
I will defend Titanic. I will vociferously defend Titanic.
Titanic is a great movie.
Titanic was an emotional movie. Titanic was an extremely emotional movie. Yes, it gets parodied, it gets goofed on all the time, but that scene where she lets him go, mm-hmm. and he floats, my heart was going. Was I felt like my heart was getting ripped out. And then that gorgeous ending where you go through the decks of the Titanic, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden it rebuilds itself, and there's Rose, and she's meeting him at the clock. I mean, you know, was it schmaltzy? Yeah, but the way he shot it and the performances and the writing before it made me care about all these characters. To not care about anybody in this movie, that is so un-Cameron.
For me, this was, I mean, my expectation of this movie, I get everything I expected out of this movie because I was expecting a visually stunning film, and I got that. But I was also expecting a Jim Cameron movie, and I kind of got that because he doesn't have the most original stories for the most part. There are some exceptions to that. But for the most part, there's nothing new here. And the characters, for the most part, in this movie, were cookie cutters of the characters he had in Aliens.
And the Abyss.
That's an insult to cookie cutters, to be honest with you. I mean, I felt nothing. Like I said, I felt. I mean, maybe this is a. I mean, I'm going to get into my agenda later on.
Well, one day I'd like to. Go ahead.
Goatee.
Oh, you want me to keep
going? Yeah, keep going. I can wait.
One of the things that I mean, I said this tonight on to Starla Hutchin. Starla Hutchin just wrapped up her first patio book, which is called The Dreamer's Thread. Mm-hmm. And if you're not listening to it, you really should. This is a terrific patio book. And I told her, I said, this how I judge a really good patio book or just a really good storytelling experience in general, which is what the movies are. When a movie's done right, it's a great storytelling experience. But the thing about Starla's book is that at the end of the book, I was getting really choked up because I was saying goodbye to all of these wonderful characters, and it feels that The Dreamer's Thread is not going to have any sequels. It's a one-shot deal.
Mm.
And there was a lot of emotion in The Dreamer's Thread. And a lot of it had to deal with the characters. Another great potty book driven potty book character driven experience is any of the Golden Age of the Solar Clipper stuff that Nathan Lowell does. I mean, I cannot tell you the stories from quarter share, half share, full share, double share, and so on. I can tell you though about the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Because Nathan Lowell makes some damn fine characters, and you care about these people. And at the end of every story, you're just like, man, I hope I'm going to see that guy again. I hope I'm going to see Ishmael Wong one more time. And you just, you know, you care. But I guess it's now a good time to drop a spoiler alert. There are quite a few people, Michelle Rodriguez in particular. When I see Michelle Rodriguez on screen, I'm like, you're not going to see the end. You got Born to Die written across your, and I called it. And when she died, I was like, oh well. And then there were other characters that were dropping. I was like, oh well. And you know,
the one thing that this movie is very predictable. And I will give you that.
No,
you can totally.
I would say it's plagiarism. I mean, when Cameron, not only did Cameron rip himself off at the end of this film, James Horner, who was doing the music, was ripping his own scores off. I mean, I was watching Aliens all over again at the end of this film, and I could hear the music from Aliens at the end. I'm like, oh come on. You mean to tell me after 15 years of developing the technology and developing all this, you didn't sink a little bit? You didn't sink more than 5 minutes into the script, maybe even 2 minutes into character development? These people made me feel dead. They made me feel dead. I'm pissed at James Cameron because he's better than this. Cameron is better than this. You look at The Abyss. You look at freaking True Lies. I cared about everybody in True Lies. I even cared about Liza Dushku in True Lies, and I didn't give a shit about her in Dollhouse. But in True Lies, I cared about her. I mean, and I felt the same way about, and since I brought it up, I feel the same way about Avatar as I did about Joss Whedon in Dollhouse. I watched Dollhouse and I said, I do not give a rat's ass about any of these people. And to say that about Joss Whedon's stuff, when Joss Whedon's forte is character development and ensemble work, and you got none of that in Dollhouse. Yeah, I know he wanted to try something different, but fuck you, you're Joss Whedon, and you know, fuck you, you're James Cameron. You raise the bar for yourself with every film you do. And while I think technically and visually Avatar was absolutely groundbreaking, that's about it. And you know what? You could say the same thing about a fucking video game. And I walked out of there. I walked out of the theater thinking to myself, "That's 3 hours of my life I'm not getting back. That's 3 hours I'm not getting back." And I want to feel something at the end of a film. I want to feel something during the film. And I'm still holding back on the agenda until you say, "Okay, T, bring on the agenda." But
if this is holding back, I'm not sure I want to see you open the floodgates.
Brother, you called it. You called me out. This podcast called me out, and I'm coming back with a vengeance, man.
I'd like to interject something here.
I made Pepsi what it is. Tony, I told you no more wire hangers ever.
Oh.
Oh God!
It is so good to have you back, T.
Yes, go pour you a shot of bourbon there for a moment here. gotta interject something.
We've been drinking since we've been sitting here.
I don't know. It's like I don't know what podcast I'm on, ears. T, because they're in the drop alcohol on this table right now, and I'm.
It's weird. It is.
We're
weird.
Doing this cold sober.
This is the third week in a row. I'm getting concerned. I'm starting to get the shakes.
Yep.
Oh dear.
I think the one thing where the movie may be totally guilty of is it's just trying to do so many new things simultaneously. The motion capture, the 3D, the graphics effects, and everything else. And the story sort of got put on the shelf somewhere.
Sort of?
Okay, there was more story in this than there was in any of the first three Star Wars movies. The 1, 2, 3, not 4, 5, 6.
Calm down.
Thank you.
That's what I meant.
Let's all get in the same space here.
Now deal with it.
It's a menace and its ilk.
This is why Eli is one of my favorite characters in science fiction right now. Eli is an Eli from Stargate Universe.
I love Eli. Eli is my buddy.
He made a crack where he said the Empire Strikes Back. He made a crack about this ice planet they were going to being Hoth.
Yeah.
And the guy looked up and said, Empire Strikes Back. And the guy's still looking at him. He said, I refuse to call it Episode 5. And I went, God bless you, man. God bless you.
That show, I tell you what, I watched some people dog it for not being Stargate enough. And that show, I there are a couple of shows I eagerly await their return from hiatus. Glee and Stargate Universe.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. Oh, I cannot wait for Glee to come back.
Ah! So. Fag. Okay, so...
Hey, you know what? Say it all you want. Glee is some of the most witty and subversive writing on broadcast television now.
Even Pania likes it.
Yeah, even Adam likes it. I mean...
We'll bring it back to the topic, but I will say, I did catch a quick clip where apparently one of the students had a crush on him, so he sang Don't Stand So Close to Me.
Yes.
And then he goes, do you understand what that meant? And she came up with something that was totally opposite of what he was trying to prove.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay, you know what? That was damn funny.
The whole show is like that. The subversive humor of it is... Because when I saw the promos for it, I said, there's no way I'm going to like this show. But Julie, bless her heart, we have to watch all these things. We did. And you know what? I sat here right along with her and was laughing harder than she was.
And see, it was the opposite in our house. I had to talk Sarah into it.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about that scene you're talking about, T, they mashed up Don't Stand So Close to Me with Young Girl, and it worked.
I was surprised how well it worked.
It was amazing how well it worked.
If you do mashups right, they can be awesome. I still remember the mashup I never thought would ever work. I saw it on The Sopranos. It was they mashed up the Peter Gunn theme with Every Breath You Take.
Mm. Oh, they got the same rhythm.
Oh, and it was freaking seamless.
Yeah.
And what was even cooler was what they set it to. You see these shots of of Tony Soprano and his family doing stuff, and you would hear Peter Gunn. But when you heard "I'll be watching you," and that's all they did, they just took the "I'll be watching you" and the bass line. You would cut to the FBI guys that were surveilling them.
Nice. I remember that. That was fantastic.
Very slick. Very slick. Now, Avatar, you could say, bring it back. Avatar, you could say, is the mashup gone wrong, because, like you said, they were trying to. It seemed like the technical, and that's what I mean. Technically, they were doing a lot of stuff. Visually, they're doing a lot of stuff. So many different things. And they suddenly said, "Oh, wait a minute! We need to tell a story." The story wasn't even an afterthought. It was more like, "Oh yeah," and they just kind of threw it together.
And see,
I'm gonna take the other side with this.
So am I.
because I mean, my opinion of it is that Cameron's not stupid. One. I mean, regardless of your thoughts about this movie in particular, Cameron's not a dumb guy. He knows how to make a movie, and he knows how the business works. And he knows there is a lot of fucking money tied up in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. And he's making a movie about blue people. Which, you know what? My dad will not see a movie about blue people. But, but...
Well, they'll miss the Smurfs movie that's coming out.
He's definitely not going. unless he takes the grandkids, then he'll probably will go to that. But he and my mother drug him to see Avatar because she wanted to go and she wanted him to go too. And he went. He enjoyed it. The thing was, this is a sci-fi movie not for sci-fi people.
Yeah.
This is a don't think about it. This is a sci-fi movie for people who watch broadcast television.
It's not a sci-fi movie.
It's really not.
No, it's not a sci-fi
movie. It's not a sci-fi movie.
It's an
movie.
Adventure movie.
With sci-fi elements.
With sci-fi elements.
Yeah.
This was my problem with...
And you see, I would say that the film Star Wars... Not Episode 4, but mm-hmm. Star Wars.
Star Wars, yeah. That,
was
there is only one movie called Star Wars. I'm with you on that. Because when I saw it in the theater, there was no Episode 4, A New Hope. It was just Star Wars.
No,
saw it in the theater the first time around, too, okay? Just, you don't have to whip your geek dick out, all right?
But here's the thing. If you look at Star Wars, You know, there is... Yeah, they did. They rehashed a lot of old cliches in that film.
Oh, yeah.
They really did.
Oh, my God. The only reason the second trilogy sucks so bad is because he'd ripped off so much of Kurosawa, there wasn't any left.
Right. But in Star Wars, in Star Wars, what made it work, was one, Lucas was not writing all the dialogue, but the other thing that was working was that these characters that he was creating were absolutely unforgettable characters, and these were characters that we cared about, and the more we got to know them, the more we cared about them.
But they are also archetypes.
Yep.
These are characters we know.
Types, yes.
These are characters we know when they come on the screen because of their look. Even their look tells us exactly who they are.
I would agree.
We have the virginal princess. We have the young hero. We have the rogue. We have the villain. We have the
mentor.
Walking carpet. The mentor. The walking carpet. The walking carpet's the one exception.
But again, what you have...
We have Abbott and Costello.
You do. You had the archetypes.
Jay and Silent Bob, if you will.
But the thing was that the characters and the acting, and to some extent the directing, probably for the first movie and a lot of the production as well, producing. All that worked together to make it feel original. And while it wasn't a sci-fi movie, it was a sci-fi movie for the masses.
Great unwashed.
Now, would Avatar? I don't think Avatar had that kind of appeal. I don't think Avatar, at least for maybe. And again, I think the reason. But again, I admit, I feel like I'm handicapped because when I went in, I wasn't in there going for a ride. I was going for a James Cameron experience because
Keep this in mind. If you ask 90% of the population what movie name two James Cameron movies today, the two movies they'll pull out are Avatar and Titanic. They won't be able to name a third.
I guess we're far enough removed from a couple.
I think we're far enough from them that most people won't be able to pull out Terminator and Aliens.
And this is my problem. See, that's my problem.
So, and I think Cameron's to blame for that because of his perfectionist attitude that he has towards himself and the fact that he won't do anything until he thinks it's right, and he also has this necessity to his production standards are so over the top. I mean, let's be honest, the man built a freaking water tank to film The Abyss in.
No, he didn't build the water tank. He used a defunct nuclear reactor.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They could have shot that differently.
Yeah.
And not shot it underwater, literally underwater. But he wouldn't do it that way.
Right.
And it wouldn't have been as good a movie either.
That leads to such long lead times in production for him that his resume is so
small,
spaced out.
His resume is relatively short.
As a director, absolutely. Is,
yeah, but again, when I went into Terminator, I'll just point it out. When I went into Terminator, I was expecting an Arnold Schwarzenegger film.
Right.
That's what I was expecting. An Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle of some way, shape, or form. And instead, I got these really, really great characters, including the Terminator itself, that made me go, wow, that's a freaking good movie. And then came Aliens. And Aliens, the first one scared the bejesus out of me, and I was like, well, this is going to be pretty ambitious doing Aliens. I mean, come on. But, wow. I mean, and again, you know, the characters, Ridley Scott, you know, I think, and this is the other thing, whereas Ridley in the Scott. Original Alien, it was all about the alien. It was about, you know, it was your typical horror movie with that Ridley Scott kind of edge to it.
It was a bottle story. It was a bottle story. You had people stuck in a bottle with something nasty.
I heard this great on a documentary about horror films. I heard that Alien, solved the problem of the haunted house.
Yeah.
Put the haunted house somewhere where they can't leave it.
It did. Yeah. It really did. It made the first horror movie in a long time one that I felt comfortable with the fact that they couldn't get away.
Right. Right.
Why they couldn't just walk out the fucking door. Yeah, well, you can't. You can't just leave the planet. Yeah,
and even better was you started to feel some of the claustrophobia.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that very distinctly from the very first one. But in the second one, it was more about the characters. And when you see the director's cut of Aliens, where they have all this extra footage.
Which is better.
It's fantastic. And then you get to, you get to The Abyss, you get to True Lies. I always liked the way Cameron, even the film like True Lies, which is not as big of a spectacle as, say, I mean, it has its spectacle moments, but it's not as big of a spectacle as, say, Titanic or The Abyss. But at the same time, I would say that what all these films have in common at their core is that they've got these, and I keep going back to it, I sound like a broken record, but I cared about everybody on the screen. And when Avatar was near its end, and the credits finally started to roll, I actually breathed a sigh of relief. I was just
now
like,
see,
thank God that's over.
Now see, I'm gonna take exception with some of the characters. There are some of the characters I did not care about. I will agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I did care about, and I can't remember the character name, but it was the female Neytiri.
That's her name.
I cared about her. I didn't care as much about Sully, but I, you know who I really cared about, which was odd, but I think it was probably more his acting than the writing.
Native boyfriend?
Nope. It was Giovanni Ribisi's character.
Yeah.
The corporate douchebag.
Yeah.
Because you know what?
Parker.
Yeah. When
you mean Paul Reiser?
Paul Reiser. Yeah. Exactly. They're the same character. They're the same character, but
they
played
were the same character.
But played
same
slightly character. Differently.
I give you that. And that was one of the places where I felt like I was getting ripped off.
Scripting wise, they were the same character, but the way Ribisi played the character was different.
Yes.
And I liked that. His take on it. Now I don't know if that was direction or if it was him. But
I
the
have
way
to say it was Ribisi.
I think it was too.
He's a good enough actor for that.
But I think the way he played it made that different enough that it was like I expected him to be Paul Reiser's character. And then some of the expressions he gave and some of his reactions were like, this is not the same guy. This guy is in over his head,
well,
is what the problem
here's
is.
The other funny thing. One of the casting choices with the military guy Quaritch.
Stephen Lang.
Quaritch was played by Stephen Lang. Originally was going to Cameron wanted to cast Michael Biehn.
Oh.
And when he went with Sigourney Weaver, chose not to cast Biehn because he didn't want to be seen as ripping everybody from Aliens. So I think Cameron recognizes in himself his tendency towards these character archetypes. And
well, because he's got him.
You see him, and everybody brings up Aliens, but you see him in other stuff too. The Abyss. The Abyss has very much several of the same character archetypes going along.
I think I'm too far removed from The Abyss, so I don't remember enough of it.
That's one of my, that's
see,
one of my favorite
for
movies.
For me, something else that I never did in any other Cameron film that I was doing in this film. And it wasn't. And I was avoiding all the press, and I was avoiding all the people who were drawing the same conclusions and things like that. I was watching The Abyss, and I was watching Avatar, and thinking to myself, this is going to be kind of the Dances with Wolves. And then, okay, now we're watching Braveheart. And then at the very end, I never was able to look to sit. I'm sure if I could go back. And just try to pick moments and go, okay, that's from this, that's from this, that's from this. But I never did that as I did in Avatar. In Avatar, I could just pick out scenes and go, yeah, seen that, it was in Dances with Wolves. Yep, seen that, also Dances with
Wolves. The same thing.
Seen that.
The same thing can be done. The same thing can be done with Star Wars too, though.
Yes, but the difference is,
Lucas picked older material that is more obscure.
And
that's one of the bigger differences.
He was able to mask it.
Well, because it was older and more obscure. I mean, one of the things he ripped off was a 1939 Russian propaganda film. We actually talked about this in like the fifth episode of Fanboy Smackdown. Right. That I mean, everything to do with the Stormtroopers is pretty much absolutely ripped from this movie. Faceless soldier. Right. It's just completely lifted.
But see, I mean, again, I just felt that I was being I felt a little insulted at how I was being spoon-fed the non-existent plot in Avatar. Plus, I never quite understood, and it was never. And while I don't think I need everything explained to me, at the same time, I feel like Avatar was so stupid on so many levels, the storyline rather.
So
it was never really explained, the whole concept of the Avatars themselves. You know, we knew that Sigourney Weaver had taken these people, had taken these Avatars into the villages, and they got ousted by the villages, but they were still going in the villages though. Ousted by the village, or if you're ousted by the
see, this is, I think, one of the things that. I don't know how much of this was shot. There is a lot more to the script,
yeah,
that was cut. That
about
I think
that whole situation
that was really watered down for the film. That I hope to God was shot, and I hope to God shows up in an extended edition.
I know they shot the stuff about the first scene when they go into the forest.
Mm-hmm.
With it's Grace and Sully and the guy who's on Bones, who was in the movie. I can't even think of the guy's name. Joel David Moore was the guy who played him, and I can't think of the character's name. But he was the other guy in the science team that came on the planet with Sully.
That's Norm Spellman.
Yeah. They go into the forest, and it's the whole scene where Jake runs into the big rhino-looking thing. And there's a portion of that scene that was cut where they're literally walking through the classroom that Grace had set up to teach the Navi English and the whole nine yards. And there's exposition given as to why they were kicked back.
Right.
Yeah, the impression I got was when the relations with RDA deteriorated... The relation of the Na'vi sort of fell apart. Apparently, they were on more or less.
Well, and there were bullet holes in the walls too. Mm-hmm. So there was some speculation that the military had the mercenaries had come in and shot the place up when they were unhappy with the Na'vi or their way where they were in the negotiations. So there were levels, I think, of the story that ended up getting cut out.
Now, that's another thing that I've seen people talk about the movie that I think there are some people that have a misconception. Either they weren't paying attention or it was glossed over so much. The military was not involved in this.
No, they were mercenaries.
Right. They were mercenaries.
No, I got.
Yeah. Well, I think
there are people.
But
who
there are people that are missing that
because
point,
because it
though.
Was very quickly mentioned. Yeah. At the very beginning.
But there are people that were saying. There are a number of people that are saying this is a movie about white guilt. I disagree with that because this is not. A military operation is not a government operation. This is about corporate greed more than. Yeah.
Well,
you
could say this is Shell Oil in Nigeria.
So, yeah, something like that is closer.
What a segue! What a segue! because it's school night for me, so I actually want to talk about another handicap that I had going into this.
All right.
And this is going to play into my agenda. Couple nights before I saw Avatar. I also saw District 9.
Which we have spoken about on this podcast, by the way.
Which I would argue District 9 is Avatar. It is District 9 with a fraction of the budget,
mm-hmm.
with nobody that you've heard of, and yet a far superior film, both technically and production and production-wise and performance-wise. At the end of District 9, I said that was the most emotional experience I've had in science fiction in a long, long time. And this is what I think is the difference between District 9 and Avatar, because I would argue they're both the same movie. They're both the same movie about a culture that the outside world doesn't understand. One guy becomes initiated into that community, and what made them so dramatically different was that in Avatar they played it up where the guy wanted to be part of the community, whether it was for subversive reasons or not. Sully's character, was it Sully?
Sully.
Jake Scully.
Sully. Sully wanted. You know, he was actively becoming part of the community. Whereas in District 9, our boy wasn't corporate. He was the government bureaucrat, and he winds up becoming part of the community when he didn't want to be.
Oh no, Vikas was not a government functionary. He was part of the corporation.
He was part of the bureaucracy machine because of the government that was going to relocate everybody to District 10.
The government subcontracted to the corporation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But these two movies run so parallel to each other, and yet I find District 9 a far more superior film because of that aspect of like both movies played on cliches, but District 9 did it in such an original spin, and they did it with really clever. They were like, "Look, we know we have a limited budget, and yet, we're going to focus on the dialogue, and we're going to focus on the characters." I could not stand the guy in the bureaucrat, and near the end, I was cheering for him.
Right.
I was like, "Good on you, man! Good on you!" And what I liked was not only were the humans three-dimensional, you know, they were likable, the not so likable, but even the aliens were that way. When Matthew, the smart alien that basically figured out, oh yeah, we need to do this and we can get our ship working again, and when he saw what the government was doing to his people, he turns to the guy and he goes, "Things have changed. I can't fix it right away. Give me 3 years." I was like, "Holy shit, he's double crossing! I didn't see that coming." And it was real, it made perfect sense. He was like, "Oh, wait a minute, they're putting experiments on our kids. Well, you know what? That's changed the rules. I'm not going just to get the ship working. I'm going to get help." And District 9 was again one of those movies that when it ended, I felt a pang of regret. Because I didn't know if I was going to see these characters again. And I cared, especially the ending image of District 9 is just gut-wrenching. It's beautiful to look at.
You're going to get no arguments from me on that.
That movie should win Best Picture, in my opinion. That movie should win Best Picture because, boy, how did they do a lot for a movie that nobody expected was going to come
out. You know what, though? There is a movie that I think can beat it. And I think that's Up. I think Up can be.
I have not seen Up yet.
Oh dear God!
You got to.
It's Pixar. I want to see
Up. Hey T, of course I want to see. T, you know what?
Wait.
You don't see it. Don't see it right now. Okay. Don't see it right now. It's you do not need to see that movie right now. Wait a little while. But
wait. Oh. Yeah, you're not the only one who told me that too. Yeah. A lot of
wait a little while.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Anyway, told me that. You know, everybody keeps trying to make comparisons of Avatar with other movies, and there's one movie that I came up with that I'm amazed that no one else has made this comparison. At least I have not seen it. Toy Story.
Yeah, well, hold on before you dive us off that
okay.
board there for a moment. One thing I want to come back to is talking about the whole babies. They weren't. The military, they were mercenaries working for the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
This has also very consistently been a Cameron theme.
Yeah.
He is very respectful of the military in almost all of his films,
mm-hmm.
except for The Abyss. In The Abyss, the military are demonized in the form of the SEAL team.
One of them is. One of them is.
Well, I guess it is kind of limited. There's a couple of people on that team that they kind of demonize.
He finds the bad egg.
But the corporation is always the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a personal feeling of his. I've read interviews with the man. And
it's true in Titanic.
Yeah, he's very anti-corporate. Yeah,
it's true in Titanic as well. It really does. That does play into Titanic.
And the thing was, that's why that movie was so perfect for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he
already felt that way, and Titanic historically is a classic example of corporate greed.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, so
but what I was going to say, but again, the thing about District 9 is I felt that the same story was being told to me in Avatar, and maybe that was bad timing on my part. It was like when I watched the original Raiders of the Lost Ark to get prepped for Kingdom of the Crystal Suck. And you know, I mean, that was my bad, but then again, I didn't expect Avatar to be what it was versus District 9 when I went in there, and I was totally floored by the emotional aspect of District 9, and like I said, and that was lacking in Avatar was the emotion. I just felt dead. I felt like there was nothing. I felt very hollow. It was a very hollow experience. Like I said, it was beautiful to look at, but it just left me kind of numb. I can't remember who mentioned it, but someone also mentioned that Avatar was a fun movie experience for them. And that was something else that I was really missing.
Really,
the thing I like about Cameron's films is that he has fun, even in the most darkest moments of his film. Of his movies, he can still find something that makes people either laugh or cheer, or just some sense of fun. I mean, even in Terminator, there's that great little moment where the guy's knocking on the door, going, "Hey, pal, you got a dead cat in there or something?" And you see him, you see the Terminator from the Terminator's point of view. And it's running down all the different possible responses, and it just says, "Fuck you, asshole." And I remember when that happened. You know, it's this very tense moment in the movie, and then we're howling because you know you hear this "fuck you, asshole." You know, it's just great. And it was that sense of fun that you get in Cameron films. You know, in Titanic, since we're talking about Titanic so much. In Titanic, you had that the scene where Jack says to Rose, "So do you want to go to a real party?" And you know they're tearing it up in the third class, and then they briefly jump back to first class. You know, they're just there with the brandies and the cigars, and it's just so stuffy and boring. And then they cut back to the other party, and they're tearing it up again. I think that in all the films you can find is it's fun, but not in this one.
I had a lot of fun with it.
I had a huge amount of fun with this movie.
I did have fun. You're just not the market for this movie.
I guess I am not. which brings it to my final agenda.
Okay.
Of how Avatar, what we can learn from Avatar, what we can learn from District 9, and what we can learn from The Hangover.
The Hangover is a fantastic movie.
My God, The Hangover
should be
done by this podcast, I think.
We need to.
My God, I had not laughed so... And again, I saw that a few days before watching Avatar.
Also, I think the Academy is criminally negligent in overlooking The Hangover for a Best Picture nomination.
You know what?
Comedy's never...
You saw The Hangover after Avatar.
No, I saw because Hangover before Avatar.
You saw Hangover, unless you watched it again, because you sent me the message saying that you wanted to be part of the Avatar podcast because you had just seen it. And then later that night, you were tweeting about watching Hangover.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Okay, so I saw Hangover afterwards, and that was how I came up with the connection between the three films. So what is the lesson we can learn from Avatar and from District 9 and The Hangover? Okay, here it is. Avatar cost a bazillion dollars to make. Of course, it has made most of it, if not all of it, back. I mean, so I'll give Cameron credit. He took a bazillion dollars, threw it into Avatar, and he made what I consider a mediocre film.
Estimates are that they're between the making of the movie and the marketing of the movie. It's somewhere in the range of between $400 and $500 million to make and market Avatar. To date,
$280 million of that production cost. Yeah.
Well, and they think that's kind of fudge numbers too.
But half a billion dollars.
Half a billion to make, and they've made $2 billion back worldwide at this point.
I'm going to say they've made it back. They made it back.
Yeah.
But here's my point. So half a billion, and it was a gamble.
Mm-hmm.
It was a gamble, and you know what? In my opinion, Hollywood dodged a bullet. Because, you know, maybe it's the American Idol generation. I don't know. Maybe people are getting stupider. I don't know.
The analysts, you know what? The analysts said this movie was gonna bomb at the box office.
Right. I said that.
Almost all analysts were saying in October and November, this movie is going to make a fraction of its money back. If it makes its money in all its merchandising and in DVD and in replay on TV, they will be lucky if they make all their money back.
I stood in this very room and said that same thing.
I'm sure you did. Yeah.
But now here's my thing. So, District 9 cost, you know, everything. You know, there was no studio money. It was Peter Jackson's money.
Yeah, it was
$35 million. He put up $35 million. He said, "Make this movie." And that movie made twice that in its first weekend. And you talk about a movie with some staying power. That movie had some staying power because of so many people talking it up. It made several hundred million dollars. I don't know. I don't have the actual figures in front of me, but it made a metric crap ton of money in comparison to how much it cost to make.
Mm-hmm.
The Hangover was the same way. The Hangover starred no big names. Cost maybe I think its price tag was something like $25 million or something like that. It was really small.
Yeah,
it's really small. It was really cheap, and the biggest name in the film was Mike Tyson. and yet that movie was one of those movies that like debuted at number five, and then all of a sudden, unlike other films where it blows its wad, as you guys said, it blows its wad, then it sinks down. That movie started in the lower echelon of the top 10, and just started working its way up, and then it stayed at number one for weeks on end, and it made a metric crap ton of money. And what I think the lesson is, of course, that was my original intent, was I was going to make this point, but unfortunately because Avatar has made so much money, it's probably a moot point. But I kind of wish Hollywood would stop and go, you know what? If we throw money at a film, it doesn't mean it's going to be a good film. It's going to be, it may even be a profit film. Let's look at these other films that we're doing, like The Hangover, and District 9. These movies that really have very small, very modest casts, very modest price tags, and they're making their money 400, 500 times over. I mean, Avatar. You're right. Avatar got lucky. Avatar got very lucky. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact, again, I'll argue this fact. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it was released in IMAX and 3D.
It was released in IMAX in 3D in January.
In December,
but Cameron knew he'd have a run through January.
Yeah.
And that helps. That helps. There's no competition.
Well, here's the thing I think you'll see is I think for the first time in a long time you're going to see a movie that starts getting extended. Because
there's a lot of backstory here we don't know about.
You know, what I'm talking about, the theatrical run getting extended.
Mm-hmm.
For the simple fact that we haven't seen a movie get extended theatrically in years.
I wouldn't even say in decades.
Yeah,
decades.
I mean, I remember watching...
I think the last time it happened was probably Titanic.
Yeah, probably. I remember watching movies stay in the theaters for more than a year. When I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
And that never happens anymore.
But I would say, I would say that where unlike District 9 and The Hangover, where they are still continuing to make money in their DVD sales and their rentals and their Apple TV downloads and so on and so forth, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see Avatar take a hit on that. You're going to see Avatar take a hit on that. Yeah, it looks great in LED and it looks great in LCD TVs. Yeah, sure, but I have a feeling it's going to suffer the same thing that happened to Transformers when I saw it on television. The Blair Witch Project, all these movies that were really, really cool. And then you watch them. I mean, one of the reasons why I have not rented Cloverfield or even bothered to go get the DVD is I know that if I watch Cloverfield at home, it's not going to be the same experience. It's just going to lack something.
You know what, T? The only time I've ever seen Cloverfield was at home, and the way it's presented, because it's presented as a video.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that I lost anything.
Okay.
But because I'm used to watching home videos now, because I have gotten used to watching personally shot videos because of things like YouTube, so I'm comfortable watching things like that on the small screen. So I think there's a difference there.
Okay, I could see that. I'm gonna have to rethink my Cloverfield fear then. But I mean, I will say this: Star Trek held up really well.
Yeah.
When I got that, District 9 looked great on my television. And just recently I rented Gamer, which was surprising. I was pleasantly surprised at how much fun and how good that movie was. You know, that was very entertaining for me. but I just feel that I got more out of these movies that cost a fortune to make than Avatar did. I thought Avatar was all about the glitz. I thought that Avatar was all about the show and nothing about the story and nothing about the character. And you know, I mean, I just felt hollow. And for, you know, like I never did make a comparison between it and Dollhouse, but I do. I felt the same way about Avatar the way I felt about Dollhouse. I kept wanting to say it's got to get better. It's got to get better. It's James freaking Cameron. I know what he does. I know what he does, and I didn't see any of it in this film. And so, if my cheese stands alone, my cheese stands alone. But let me tell you, you want me to go on a rant, I will go on a rant if Avatar walks away with best film. It is a lot of things, and it should win all the technical awards. It should definitely win all the technical awards. But if it walks away with best film,
sweep them pretty easily. Yeah, I actually feel sorry for the guys who did the effects for Star Trek, and I think. What was the other? There was the third one for visual effects.
I cannot. Revenge of the Fallen.
No, I'll tell you.
Revenge of the Fallen.
Star Trek should not even be considered for visual effects. You know why? Too much fucking lens flare.
Well, there is
that. With the lens flare.
But the reason I feel sorry for them is because in any other year, they'd have a chance.
With the lens flare. Not with that lens flare.
Lens flare
pissed me off.
Blame lens flare on Sergio Leone. He made it artistic.
No. Blame it on Adobe. let's be honest here.
Good one. Right. I like that.
Now, you know, back to the whole theatrical experience comment.
Right.
My brother-in-law is currently serving in Iraq, and I'm sure it'll come to no surprise to anyone. The fact that he can pick up theatrical releases extremely cheaply in the bazaar in town on DVD, and he sent me an email said he picked up Sherlock Holmes and Avatar, and I wanted to tell him, dude, don't watch Avatar, wait, because I'm hoping that it's still in the theaters when he gets back for his leave in a few months, because I think not seeing it in 3D, or at least not seeing it on the big screen the first time, will diminish the experience.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's where Avatar is going to take a big hit. And I think you're right. I think Cameron is smart. I think Cameron is very smart. He's smart enough to know that this movie will not work on on home theater systems. Yeah. But if he can get people to shovel out the money. If he can get people to
shovel out the money,
he's having no problem there.
I mean, if he's getting them to go to that IMAX 3D, then you know what? That's all that matters.
But here's the thing I'll say about that.
And then I'm going to wrap up because like I said, it's a school night. It's 4 minutes to midnight.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The one thing I'll say about that is good for him.
because the simple fact of the matter no, the simple fact of the matter is the American theatrical distribution industry is been in dire straits for a long time. And if he's managed to come up with something, not just an Avatar, but in the concept of making 3D into something not, that isn't a stunt. And that was my big thing about this movie, is the 3D in it wasn't a stunt. And if he's managed to pull that off and managed to make theatrical events real again, in that you have to see something in a theater, and it's and it, it brings the American
it puts theater, butts back
American
in the
movie
seat.
Theater industry back from the brink, then good on him.
Okay,
I gave you that.
Just just because we were mentioning District 9 and The Hangover and some of the information while we were talking about that, I went ahead and pulled up some numbers just because I was curious. District 9, the production budget on it was $30 million. The domestic gross was $115.6 million.
See, that's about that's close to, if not over, 500%.
And pretty good for a movie that came out of a failed deal
came
for a
in August.
Movie.
In August, yeah.
Well, that was the thing. District 9 came out of a failed deal for the Halo movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
Blomkamp was signed on to do that, and when it fell through, Jackson felt bad and said, "So do you got anything else?" And Blomkamp pitched District 9 at him, and it stuck.
Well, because that was the short film that he had done.
Yeah, the fact that he had a working demo made it easy to sell.
It came out of the failure of it.
T, if you haven't seen it yet, I would recommend going and checking out the short film. I think you can find it on YouTube.
Hmm.
It's a ten minutes long.
I'd like to see it. Yeah.
It's like a DVD extra.
It could be. I don't know.
I think I got it as an extra download on Apple TV.
So, all right. Yeah, check that out.
So what about for The Hangover?
The Hangover. The production budget on that was $35 million. Its domestic gross was $277 million.
Wow.
It was the number six movie last year. It beat Star Trek.
Yeah. and like I said,
by $20 million, it beat Star Trek.
Like I said,
wow.
Criminally negligent that the Academy didn't recognize them at all.
Comedies never do well with the Academy.
Comedy. Yeah, it's comedy.
Comedies never do well. You know, everybody said, especially when Up got nominated, and I hope to God the Academy sees the light of day and actually gives Up the award. But
I don't think
when they announced
the animated feature that. Best animated feature.
I think they're doing both.
I think if they were nominated for Best Picture, they should not have been allowed in the other categories. It's not fair to the other films.
Yeah, I know.
It's not.
Well, Pixar has taken it the last 3 years now.
I know. And there's actual real competition this year. I mean, there's films in there that deserve it.
Yeah. So, I was going to say something else, and now
so
I'm
on that note, and on that note,
yeah.
I am going
to... Let's go ahead and call it a night. We never really got to the deep geeking, but I think this was a more interesting discussion about it. Just because this movie is something different, and it's going to be, I mean,
analyzed for years and years and 20 years.
It's going to be talked about for a long time because it broke records,
right? And it also broke new ground.
And people are going to be scratching their heads, going, "How the fuck?" That's right, the 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, 30 years from now, they're going to be geeking on this film just like they do geek on Star Wars now.
Hmm. Wow.
Right.
How dare you? How dare you?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I said it.
All right. Let's call it a night.
I'm still going to kick you in the nads if I ever meet you.
Deal with it, bitch.
Remember that.
All right.
Have a good night, Chief.
And that's right. That is that.
I have a pen. And I've watched The Bourne Identity, and I will drive this into your eye. I know the tactics. I've learned them from Bear Grylls. Don't fuck with me.
Mm. Dude, we're going to get that on YouTube. It's brilliant. I'm there.
Oh, all right.
Good night, gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Mm.